Welcome to the second hour of the 9 till noon show today. We spoke earlier to Paul Leonard from Alcohol Forum Ireland about alcohol harm. And Connor says, I have to agree with that lady. Unfortunately, I know several, too many actually, who died from cancer that never touched a drink. I also know a few elderly who drank and lived into their 90s at this stage. Everything you take is associated with cancer. Several ladies who are currently going through breast cancer don't drink alcohol at all. And how can she explain that? I remember years ago, there was an anti-smoking campaigner called Alan Carr, and at one point I read his book. And Alan Carr said, the most dangerous person in the world is Uncle Fred. And Alan Carr argued that Uncle Fred, everyone has one, and Uncle Fred is the guy that drank and smoked and lived to be 100. And everybody says, Uncle Fred drank and smoked and lived to be 100, sure, I'll be grand. And they ignored the fact that another 99 people who had acted in the same way were dead before they were 70. And there's a certain element of that here. I think, Connor, in fairness, not everyone drinks to excess. Not everyone who drinks is going to get cancer. Not everyone who gets cancer is going to drink. This is a matter of risk. And I don't want to put words in Paul Leonard's mouth or anybody else's, but what they're saying is, if you drink alcohol, you are increasing your risk of cancer. And what she is saying, and it's a fair point, is that we want to put this message in front of people, give people the knowledge. The knowledge is that the research, as we interpret it and as we understand it and as scientifically it appears, the evidence is that if you drink alcohol, your risk of cancer is increasing. It's not saying you're going to get it. It's not saying if you don't drink alcohol, you won't get it. It's saying that it is a risk. And I think they wouldn't want to be saying any more than that. We spoke to our caller earlier on, just before the break, that we were talking to Charles, who was a law lecturer in Galway, about rights for disabled people. Caller says, there wasn't even a chair for people with mobility issues in the polling station when I went to vote on Friday. When I asked for a chair, I was offered a child's chair, which was too low to sit in. Now, I suppose the fact that many polling stations are in schools explains why it was a child's chair you were offered. But yeah, it's a very fair point that maybe there needs to be more facilities, even if it's only the provision of a chair where someone can sit down or whatever like that. Certainly something that needs to be looked at. Caller, we were talking yesterday about scams, and a caller says, I got a fraudulent call from Visa to say I had money taken out of my account. I nearly gave them my info. Now is the time of year that they're all out. And the message, the key message, and we heard this from Mark Ford from the Central Bank yesterday, you hear it from Gardaí on a regular basis, whatever you do or don't do, don't ever discuss account numbers, passwords, codes, anything like that when you receive a call, particularly if it's a cold call. And indeed, they tell you they will never ask you for PIN numbers or anything like that ever on a phone call or in a text message. Public Services Centre is only open to the public on a Tuesday and a Thursday. Can anybody explain why this office hasn't fully reopened to the public since COVID? Not everyone has access to online services. Very fair point. Again, one on scams. There's a scam going around, scammers sending out fake ESB bills. They ask you to shift your bank from AIB to Danske Bank. People might get caught out with this scam. Very often, what happens is you will get, and this used to happen an awful lot more, but I remember regularly I used to get texts, dear customer of such and such a bank, there is an issue with your account. Please log into this address immediately. I wasn't a customer of such and such a bank. But the law of averages states that if a scammer sends out an email to 2,000 people, I won't be a member or a customer of that bank. But, you know, at least 500 or 600 of the people they send emails to will be. Connor says a four pack of drinks was displayed as €4.50. When I went to the till, I was charged €7. Why is the full price not displayed? It's very deceiving when you go to the till and you're asked for a different price to what's displayed. Now, I can't answer that. The one thing that's happening, I've noticed more and more in recent times in supermarkets on both sides of the border, is that you're getting now many supermarkets have their loyalty cards. They go under different names, so we'll say their loyalty card. And what you'll very often now get is you'll get the full price and you'll get then beside it a loyalty card price. So the full price is such and such. The loyalty card price is lower. And that's in a bid to get customers to take out loyalty cards. And the argument, I think, here maybe, and I'm not saying it is, it could well be, Connor, that you saw And very often what they'll do as well is, and I've been caught with this, that the loyalty card price will be emblazoned in yellow and very prominent, and the full price will be in smaller lettering beside it. And you'll see value club price, blump. And it may be that that's what's happened here. I can't say it is, but I suspect it's a possibility. What's the deal with Biden pardoning his son? Sure, how many of these with connections in Ireland, i.e. the three P's, priests, politicians, pals, who had pending convictions, conveniently quashed? Good morning. How about we sell our own food to our own people? It's quite simple. We have over 5 million people, plenty to support farmers and fisher or folk. We are Ireland. Just because you don't want change, you're happy in your... Right, okay. We'll leave that one there because... But it's okay. A person basically saying, don't worry about imports, don't worry about exports, sell our own food to our own people and we can be self-sufficient. We need a one-house policy in this country per couple or single person. The greed of people who want more houses is artificially keeping prices up on people and couples on low incomes. Couples on minimum wage should be allowed to own a house with a bed and fire. Councils that don't help people live in a mobile home on their own land are helping the greedy people. Absolutely heartbreaking news about that wee girl. Too many children being harmed and affected by domestic violence. Absolutely. When I was at school, the girls were much smarter overall than the boys. If the woman is qualified for the job, she should get the job, but she should not be getting special treatment because she is not a man. Isn't that sexist? If you think being sexist is a bad thing, why would you be pushing being sexist, even if it is to further your own agenda? I think the argument is, as I understand it, and I presume that goes back to our discussion yesterday on gender quotas, what is being suggested is there is not equality of opportunity. If there was equality of opportunity, and this, a comment like this presupposes that, it presupposes that men and women will have exactly the same opportunity, and in that case they are equal, and then they can compete on their own merits. The problem is if you don't have equality of opportunity, then you will not succeed. I'll give you a very crude example. If someone says to me, take part in a running race with someone. And let's say I and somebody else can run about equally the same. So they say, well, you're going to have to take part in a race. And you're going to race along a tarmac road and the race is going to be 500 metres. Now, I doubt I could run 500 metres, to be honest. I'd walk it, but I can't run it. But let's say I could. Let's say I'm going to run a race over 500 metres with somebody who roughly is about the same as me in terms of ability to run. If I'm given a pair of runners and they have to do it barefoot, I'm going to win. That is not equality of opportunity. And that, it's a rough equivalent, but it's basically roughly what it's saying. That if I'm running and I have a pair of runners on, I immediately have an unfair advantage. And even though the other person may be as good as me in every other respect, I am going to win because I have an artificial advantage that that other person doesn't have.
The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
It's the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio. Just before we go any further, remind you of our competition. Our first one, because we're being so generous this week, we have two competitions. We've teamed up with Cadbury Secret Santa. They have 22,000 bars to give away this year. To celebrate the return of the Secret Santa, we have two huge hampers of chocolate to give away, plus a €50 voucher to be won every day. All you have to do is tell us why you would want to surprise someone special with a Secret Santa bar this year. Why do they deserve it? What good reason do you have to surprise someone with a Secret Cadbury bar? Tell us about that person in your life who deserves that treat. You could win €50 today and also go into a draw to win a Cadbury hamper for you and for your nominee. Don't forget, if you want to send that bar in secret, just look out for the special posters that are cropping up all over the country and just text or WhatsApp us with your nominee and the reasons why you're nominating them, and you can do so on 086 60 25,000. That's 086 60 25,000. Now, I want to talk about an important issue. Today is National Searching for the Missing Persons Day. And there's an event taking place in Dublin. A database that allows searches of unidentified human remains is being launched at the 12th annual Missing Persons Day. It's taking place today in Dublin's Croke Park. Now, I'm joined on the line by Tosh Lavery. He's been a guest on the show before. He has worked over the years with, among others, the Garda Diving Unit, has been involved in many, many searches, and also has taken a very keen interest in this area. Tosh, a very good morning to you.
How are you getting on, Donald?
I'm very well indeed. Thank you, Tosh. In terms of this event, Tosh, and you've had the experience of diving and searching and finding remains and helping families come to terms with a loss by at least giving them a body to bury. You've been involved on the side that's done that, but you've also been involved in cases where it hasn't happened.
Ambiguous loss, it's called, not known. And it's probably one of the worst afflictions to put on any family. And I mean, we all know about the disappeared, and there's still four people outstanding in that group, and people have had remains returned to them. Every one of us, I saw something the other day, I think it was Mary Lou saying about a funeral and about attending funerals. And I just saw her comment like it's the most humane thing for people to do, to have a body, to go to a Christian burial. Like, and there was bodies that were never handed up. Now, in this instance, in most of these instances, we say that we'll deal with today, but now, there are people going to be there today, like the Mohans, and people that their children and their families, mothers and fathers, everything, disappeared through crime. And then there's others that decided to leave home or whatever else. There's many more. Mary Boyle is your own main case in Donegal and Kincastle, going back to 1977. But one thing I would always, there's fishermen, and I've been there all my life, and the Evelyn Marie anniversary is coming up on the 7th of January, 50 years. Nobody ever mentions fishermen that are lost and they'll never be returned. They're missing to their families as well. It's an awful, awful affliction to put on any family, to not have a body and to be lying there in bed at night, you know, thinking about what happened and where are they. And another thing as well is using the word closure is not a proper thing to do as well either, because there's never closure. Even if remains are found, families ask themselves what happened to them and what did the person think before they died and all this, you know, all those things go through. So ambiguous loss, not knowing where someone is a horrible, horrible affliction on anybody. And it'll be sad. I'm just near Croke Park now. I'm UA in and Park here at Phibsborough. And to see the amount of families that sit around there, and especially mothers, I often notice that a lot of the fathers have died in long-term missing now. And to just see them sitting there chatting and to realise, you know, I don't know, it's very, very hard to understand it now. I haven't anybody missing belong to me. But for them to be seen talking and looking at them, it's really, really a very, very sad time for them.
What more can be done, Tosh? I mean, science is improving all the time. We know there's talk of that database now that's being launched. It'll allow for searches of unidentified human remains. Are we getting to the point where maybe we can get more information from unmarked graves, more information from unidentified remains, and hopefully these scientific advances, will help bring some closure to other families? And as I know you said closure is the wrong word, and I apologise for using it.
So what I mean is the amount of closure that you get from returning remains or identification is fantastic, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't use that word myself. No, you are very, very correct. Like next week, today, there'll be people speaking down here on Croke Park, right? You have crime call on every month now, and there's always one or two missing persons named on that. Now, before, there was never anything. There's a missing persons group now based in Kevin Street and are in constant contact with England. That was never done. There's bodies being identified now after 17 and 18 years and 20 years. And as you said, the database that's set up, and that was fought for many years. And even the National Missing Persons Day was fought for many years. And we had to go in and sit in front of it all and make a case for a National Missing Persons Day. But I have to say there is major, major progress having been made by lots and lots of people, you know, different attempts. Look, there's changes in government or changes in politicians, but the database, the forensic science now, you're right, has made a huge difference. I see the other day where they exhumed the body up there in the north in a graveyard to deal with where they disappeared, you know. So if information comes in, and there is people out there, and that's one thing I will say, there is people out there all over Ireland. I mean, Coolock itself have 10 or 12 or 13 people on the missing list. There's people out there that know where people are buried, you know, that were involved in crime or whatever else. And I'd ask them now, people, just think about this if you hear me speaking on the radio. Just think about what it's like to lose your little child in the shopping centre just when you're shopping. And then when the kids are away, we say for an overnight, you don't answer the phone, the amount of pain you have in your stomach. And then people like Mrs. Boyle above there in Donegal, suffering since 1977, and many, many more parents like them. You know, the amount of suffering that they're going through. But they, no, I think myself, and I have to say, and I would have been a critic, there's major progress have to be made within the Garda Síochána, within the government, within, you know, the forensic science groups. And people think that the cold case teams are not working. They're working every day. We saw about Jojo recently, you know, Deirdre Jacob, Sandra Collins, all those cases are being looked into, you know. But yeah. we do need help. We need help from the outside. There is people that know. There's parents, there's mothers, there's fathers, there's wives, there's children, there's friends out there that know something. And please come forward and give these people a bit of peace.
And as you said too, there are also the cases, and in Donegal, we know as much as any about those missing at sea. I mean, I remember the first major story I covered in my very first days here was the Carrick of Tyne, the loss of five men in that horrendous tragedy. And there are so many more like it off the coast of Donegal and have been for many years.
Donal, if you think about it, like the Evan and Marie, the Carrigona, the boy Sean, the Ross Turk in the Erie, the Elliam, I could go back over them, you know, the Carrick of Tyne. And these people, this is all over Ireland now. You never see any of their names mentioned in a missing person. They are missing persons to their families. You know?
It's funny, I remember actually, and an area that you will know well, being a fellow Waterford man, I was in Dunmore East recently, and I just saw the monument to lost fishermen there. And it's a lovely monument, I have to say. It was unveiled a few years back in Dunmore East. But when you look at the list of names and the number of names on that, it really brings it home. And there are monuments like that pretty much in every port in this country.
But don't listen, it's fantastic that they're even there. Even today, people don't realise today what it's like for them families to sit and meet and to know they're not on their own. You know what I mean? Oh yeah, that monument down there. My own friends, I have friends on that, believe it or not. My friends and names are on that on that monument down there. More, I'll be down there next week anyway. But no, but today is a great day. Like, you know, people think, oh, I have to travel or this or that and other. They're all supporting each other here today. Everybody there. Bernard Fidan will come over from England on a plane. Her sister is missing out in Bray. Like, Mrs. Boyle will come from Donegal. Now, and that's another thing. Garda liaison officers are travelling with these people. They're travelling in the train up from Waterford. They're travelling in the train from Mayo with the families. You know, that's a huge improvement. One time I met families, they told me they hadn't spoken to a guard in 10 years. That's all finished. That's all gone. That don't happen anymore. Guards are there and they have liaison guards and their families are able to speak to them. Now, a lot of the time, a guard won't have information, you know, a long-term mission. But even to sit down with someone for a cup of tea and speak to them, ask them how they're feeling. And some people are frightened, you know, to speak to people, parents or siblings of somebody's missing when they see them on the street. And the only reason is they don't know what to say to them, you know. But believe it or not, they like for you to talk to them about it and see how they're getting on, and, you know, because they all have a celebration so far, it's called. Like, there's days they have birthdays and Christmases and they leave a chair empty at the table for the missing person. You know, there's an awful lot involved in it. But I do believe, you know, that there is major progress after being made with regards to identification and that. But we really do need the help from members of the public, people out there that know, especially that people are missing in crime. There are other people involved. Like, this don't happen on their own. There are cases that are one-off, but that's, you know, another day's work.
Tosh, we know that President Higgins lit a candle at Áras an Uachtaráin this week to remember all those who are missing, and all we can hope really is that the light from this candle will maybe stretch out and, you know, bring some hope into those who are missing, and hopefully, based on this campaign and these new scientific advances, that we will bring, you know, hope to some families that they will be you know, they will get the remains of their loved ones and they will be able to have that burial and be able to have a focus for their grief and their loss. For the moment, Tosh, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much, Don.
Okay, Tosh. That's Tosh Lavery there, very, very much involved in the search for missing persons over the years, a former member, as I said, of that Garda diving unit. And today, as we say, is National Missing Persons Day and that event taking place in Croke Park. Just want to remind you of our competition in association with the Silver Tassie Hotel and Seascape Spa. We're giving you the chance to win a Pamper Me Please package. It's worth €130. You can win a 2.5 hour spa package and it includes, just wait for this, an aromatic steam session and cocoon room, a hot towel foot and back cleanse, a stress relieving back massage, a Yonka facial with face and scalp massage, a pressure point foot massage and snooze room relaxation time with refreshments. And to be in a chance with, of winning that prize on Friday, just please answer this question. Which Christmas song mentions a one horse open sleigh? Is it A, Jingle Bells, or B, White Christmas? And text or WhatsApp your answer, name and address to 086 60 25000. Now, time for our Wellness Wednesday spot. And today we are talking about Crohn's and colitis. This is Crohn's and Colitis Awareness Week. And we're joined on Zoom, I'm delighted to say, by Lorraine Cooney. And Lorraine is a gastroenterology dietitian and author of the Crohn's and Colitis Diet Information and Recipe book. And Lorraine, it's great to speak to you. Good morning.
Hi there. Thank you for inviting me on your show.
It's our pleasure. Now, Crohn's and colitis, it's a condition, basically people with inflammatory bowel disease, irritable bowel disease, you hear it called as well. I mean, they're all, I will say, under the same sort of umbrella. But tell us about Crohn's and colitis and what those conditions actually involve.
Yeah, these are chronic inflammatory conditions that impact the bowel. They come under the umbrella of inflammatory bowel disease, which actually is distinctly different from irritable bowel syndrome or IBS, although they sound very alike.
Yeah.
So the inflammation will happen in the bowel. For Crohn's disease, it can be anywhere from the mouth at entry into your digestive system to the exit. And for people with colitis, ulcerative colitis, it really just involves the large intestine, any segment of that. They kind of have sometimes similar symptoms like the abdominal pain, diarrhea, fatigue, and other symptoms that might affect your body. You just don't feel well. You might have achy joints. You might feel nauseous, for example. But you get a wide, varied impact on the body, and they can be go through different phases. Sometimes you're in remission when there's no inflammation, and sometimes you're in a flare where that you're actively inflamed in the bowel. They're primarily medically managed, so most people will need to take medication day to day to keep that inflammation at bay. And the reason why we're highlighting what Crohn's and colitis have done recently is that we've written a book to kind of highlight the diet and lifestyle aspects of managing these diseases to sort of fill that gap for people who want that information.
Is it a case that each individual will have different triggers, each individual will have different reactions to different foods, or is it possible to say it can be triggered by X food and it can be triggered by Y food and you're better off if you concentrate on eating A, B and C?
Yeah, no, it would be easy for people if they could really identify what flares the condition, because they would 100% avoid that one thing. But it's a lot more complex than that. These are conditions with an interplay of genetics, environmental factors and your microbiota, which are these trillions of microbes that reside in the bowel, and they kind of protect the gut lining. And so it's very hard to deduce kind of what does cause a flare or what keeps somebody in remission. So what we did is try and pull the evidence base of what we do know can help people. And what appears to be important is to eat maybe more variety of plant-based foods. So like grains, fruit, vegetables, those types of foods that a lot of people with IBD may kind of be fearful of or have been told before not to eat. So there's this difficulty there in knowing that. And then sometimes there's more obvious triggers, like if you drank a lot of strong coffee or alcohol or high fat foods, you might notice maybe more of an immediate effect. But it can be just so different for different people. And what helps one person may not help the other. So it can be, you know, a lot of trial and error actually to find out what suits each person.
Is there evidence that the higher concentration of processed foods in our diet these days mm-hmm. is having an impact? You know, maybe 50 years ago, we'd have been much more likely to eat fresh fish. Now we're much more likely to eat fish fingers.
I know, yeah. So there's a lot of interest in this area. Unfortunately, we're still waiting on the human trials to confirm it, but we would think that processed foods is not a good idea for people with inflammatory bowel disease because it may impact that lining in the intestine. And so we would advise to limit processed and packaged foods. And if we look at a lot of the restrictive diets out there, that's what they have in common. They kind of avoid anything that's really processed. And that maybe, well, we're thinking it probably is helpful, but we're just waiting on the trials. But if we used to put on a sensible hat and be healthcare professionals, we know that it's not a great idea to have a lot of those foods in our diets. Unfortunately, they do make up a big component of a lot of people's diets these days. So thinking maybe more what you can have rather than what you can't have. And so I would be thinking you need good quality protein, like lean meats or eggs or pulses. You need some healthy fats. Like, you know, use your olive oil, use avocado, maybe a small amount of nuts and seeds. And then you have more plant-based foods. So colour in your diet, fruit and vegetables, grains, maybe some pulses. And that combination of those foods tends to be seen as protective and helpful for a lot of people now with inflammatory bowel disease.
Now, I have something here. It says, what causes diverticulitis? Now, I know there's diverticular disease and diverticulitis, yeah, which I take it is slightly different from ulcerative colitis.
Yeah.
I mean, and from that point of view, is it possible to say what causes colitis?
No, we don't know. It's complex interplay between genetics. So if you have sort of a gene in your body, you may be more susceptible. The microbiota, that's the trillions of microbes. These are mostly bacteria in your large intestine. And there's so many of these, trillions and trillions, there are a lot of zeros. And some, it seems to be an imbalance of these microbes in the gut that may, you know, allow more pathogens or bad bacteria to kind of multiply down there. That can be an impact. Poor diets, yeah, we think there's a link with poor diets. That would be the processed foods or not eating fiber, which would be those plant-based foods. Maybe things like stress and anxiety, but they don't cause inflammatory bowel disease. They can just make things worse.
And in terms of fiber, you know, is it the case that people need to have a higher fiber diet or take fiber supplements? Now, I know there's one... is it Fibrogel it's called? And it's a bit like sort of drinking sludge. Are supplements like that good? I mean, should people that have Crohn's or colitis be looking at things like those fiber supplements just to build it up? Or would it be better just to eat more high fiber foods?
Yeah, that Fibrogel is... the ingredient is psyllium husks. It's a beautiful fiber and it can be very helpful for regulating stools. But I would focus on getting the foundation right. So I know from meeting people with inflammatory bowel disease, they don't eat enough fiber and a lot of people are scared of fiber and they've often been told to follow a low fiber diet, but never been told to come off the low fiber diet when things are a little bit more settled. So when you're in a flare, you probably, you know, you might be losing weight, you don't have an appetite, you've all these symptoms, you're trying medication, you can feel really, really horrible and it can be a difficult time. You might even need surgery. But when you come out of that spell, it's really important to try and increase fiber nice and slowly in your diet. Sometimes people may need extra fiber, but there's a sweet spot for everybody. And I think it's not too high and not too low. It's somewhere in the middle. And the variety of different plant-based foods tends to be a marker of how we get a better balance of these microbes in the gut. And this can be hard, but we try and include this in the book that's just been published by Crohn's and Colitis Ireland. And ways that we can try and slowly and gradually increase fibre in the diet and not to be scared of it. And knowing that you can adapt the textures. So if you use like well-cooked meals, like particularly like a stew or a bolognese or a curry, they're soft and moist meals. Or even if you can't do it that way, you can start blending, you can make soups or smoothies. And we've given lots of ideas and tips and recipes for that in the book. And that seems to be the message that's coming through across the world with all the researchers and experts in inflammatory bowel disease, that more variety of these plant-based foods is helpful. It doesn't necessarily mean supplements, but if you have support of a dietitian, you may be able to, you know, navigate that as well.
Sometimes in the food sector, we see advertisements that make... I won't say they make claims, but they make very strong suggestions. For instance, we're told in one product that there's a difference between good bacteria and bad bacteria. And if you consume this product, you'll be putting good bacteria into your body. I mean, you know, is there any basis to claims like that, that by taking certain drinks or certain yogurts or whatever, that you're putting good bacteria into your body? And you know, or are these just... advertising ploys, as it were.
Yeah, there's a bit of truth and a bit of marketing going on there. I think some of these fermented foods like yogurt, I think that can be helpful, but they're live bacteria that you'll be putting into your gut. They may be helpful, but you already have a balance of microbes down there, so they won't make a big dent in the kind of composition of what you have. And the other ones you're talking about are probiotics. So these are strains of probiotics that are kind of packaged into maybe like a capsule or a tablet, and you can take one a day, and that's supposed to confer an effect. We know that they're particularly helpful in maybe in irritable bowel syndrome, which is IBS, not IBD. And for some people with ulcerative colitis, probiotics can be helpful. But we don't see the same with Crohn's disease. And the thing is that there's thousands of strains out there, and a lot of the products aren't that great. So you've got to be very clued into what the evidence says of which strains actually work in which condition, and then try that one for you. So it's a bit of a minefield in that area, but it can be helpful for colitis, but not Crohn's.
Lorraine, can I take on a caller? Because I have Janice on the line from Buncrana. Janice, good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Donald?
Very well indeed, thanks. Janice, I have Lorraine here. If you want to tell Lorraine your story and put your question to her.
I was diagnosed in 1998. I'm Crohn's. I have it a long time now. And I've had 5 bowel resections.
Okay.
I've been on Fleximab, I've on Humira, I've been on Entyvio. I have now found Stelara. I've been on it a year, and it seems to have put back on a bit of weight and kind of settled things down a bit. But in the meantime, I found out I'm celiac and lactose, and I found even just taking the lactose out of my diet has made a huge difference. And I'm just saying, like 27 years, I would have been very, very sick, a lot of weight at the start very quickly. And I'd actually lost half my body weight once I did. My son, the pregnancy brought it to a head. And for people like myself, I find the mobility has gotten very bad over the past while. Just where would I go? I have a fantastic bowel nurse in Letterkenny, Cathy, and I have a fantastic gastro doctor, Dr. Steele. And it's just not even to ask a question, just for, I think, excuse me, more availability, especially I hear you talked about the leaflet. It'd be fantastic because we still hold the first documentation book. It was written by Professor Gleason in Dublin years ago, and I held on to it for all these years. And once you can have something to explain to family and friends, or let them read it themselves, they're all kind of on the one sheet then.
Yeah, you've been through an awful lot, and I'm glad you have medication that's maintaining your symptoms at the moment, and you have a great team. That's fantastic to hear.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you'd be interested in the book that's just been published by Crohn's and Colitis Ireland, which has maybe 15 chapters of information of navigating not just diet, but life in general, and trying to live your best life and have confidence in eating and enjoying food, and just a lot of practical tips. And then we've over 60 recipes. Yeah. And that
getting
will bring
the quality
you
of life
places.
Back, I found.
Yeah, that's ultimately, that's what we're trying to do as healthcare professionals.
Yeah. When I got my quality of life back, but just at the moment now, I would say that the mobility isn't great. And I just sit at home, practice your hands, keep your feet, do as much as you can on the days that you feel so fatigued. There still might be the odd time, maybe once a month now, it gets 2 or 3 days that I'm solid in bed. I can't get up the energy levels through the ground, everything. Mm-hmm. But just to advise the listener, it's not the worst thing in the world to be diagnosed. There's plenty of supports, plenty of help out there. It's a lot better now than what it was when I was diagnosed, and I'm glad times have changed. And it's nice to hear someone talking about Crohn's, and I just had a text in.
Well, Janice, thank you very much indeed for texting in, and it's great to hear that things are going better, and hopefully that will remain the case. Janice, you look after yourself, and all the best.
I appreciate it. Thank you for taking
Janice, you take care.
Thank you, Lorraine. Take care.
Right, bye-bye. Janice, bye-bye now. Lorraine, a caller says pineapple contains bromelain, which has great healing properties for the intestines. Would you concur?
Yeah, you could make that argument, but you can't just focus on one food. We know that the sign of gut health, you want this buzzword called diversity of gut microbes, and you get that from eating a diversity of plant-based foods, not focusing on one food. Yeah. So it's all the fruits, all the vegetables, all the grains, all the nuts, seeds, pulses.
And presumably each individual will eventually get to know their own body, and it may be the case that for one person, pineapple is, I won't say a silver bullet, because nothing is going to be a silver bullet in this case, but pineapple might be something that particularly helps them. For somebody else, it mightn't be pineapple, but it might be, for the sake of argument, melon. For somebody else, it might be apple. For somebody else, it might be banana. That each person, given their own particular circumstance, will find their own particular, I was going to say comfort food, but don't want to say comfort food, because that suggests something else, but their own particular food that they feel is almost their happy food that they can go to, and maybe it gives them a boost that it's not going to give somebody else.
Exactly. And you want a wide range of these happy foods. You want to find what you can tolerate and expand your diet as much as possible, but not to the point where it's triggering. So you want to keep symptoms at bay. So even, you know, if you're in remission, you do suffer a lot with profuse maybe diarrhea and awful pain and nausea, for example. And during those times, you may have to restrict your diet a little bit or change things. But when you're in remission, you need to expand those foods and find which foods do make you feel good day to day. So it's about feeling good, having freedom to eat and managing your symptoms.
The book, Lorraine, it's an interesting one. It's just to tell us briefly about the book, its title, and how people can get it.
Yeah, so the book is produced by Crohn's and Colitis Ireland. It's called Diet Information Recipe Book. You can find it on their website, www.crohnscolitis.ie. It's €10 for members and €20 for non-members. Crohn's and Colitis Ireland also have a support line on 01531 2983, Monday, Wednesday, Friday from 9:30 to 12:30, which is really helpful for people who may have a question or maybe feel unsupported, that they can contact the charity. They do amazing work. They have lots of webinars, resources. So just log on to the website and you'll find all the information there.
And another important thing is that, as far as the book is concerned, also tips for eating out. And I'm sure eating out, if you've got Crohn's or colitis, can be a minefield.
Absolutely. Most people will avoid eating out because of the nature of their condition and what they have to deal with. But we want to maybe break down that barrier and see how people can navigate that and feel more empowered to make the right decisions for them.
Lorraine Cooney, gastroenterology dietitian and author of the Crohn's and Colitis Diet Information and Recipe Book. There's a mouthful. Thanks very much indeed, Lorraine.
Thank you.
Okay, Lorraine, and hopefully that perspective has helped some people out there today, and I'm sure it has.